Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
With ever-increasing supplies of COVID-19 vaccines pouring into the state of Oregon, it has never been easier for many of those ineligible populations to receive the shot if they want to. But that has not been the case for everyone. Language, cultural, technological, and socioeconomic barriers remain, perhaps none so obvious as the challenges facing those tasked with reaching the homeless population throughout Clackamas County. Paramedics with the Clackamas Fire Community Medicine Program visited a homeless encampment outside of Oregon City Wednesday to administer immunizations to more than a dozen people. Clackamas Fire shared photos on Twitter and said the program would be visiting other areas throughout the district where residents may not be able to easily access the vaccine. During a press conference Friday morning, Governor Kate Brown highlighted the efforts of Clack Fire paramedic Amy Jo Cook and her colleagues in this outreach. Amy Jo vaccinated 12 people for COVID-19 who were at risk but might not otherwise have been able to get immunized, Brown said. Her experience taught her that she'd need to take advantage of these kinds of moments to gain the best results. The team next plans to drop in at a local shelter during lunch and shower times to engage more at-risk individuals who want to be vaccinated for COVID-19. This kind of outreach can take a little time, said Brown, but it's vitally important to helping us reach community immunity. The state of Oregon has administered almost 2 million doses of COVID-19 vaccine to more than 1.2 million eligible adults so far. More than 700,000 Oregonians have been fully vaccinated, representing about 18% of the state's population. Health officials say that the state can't reach the threshold for herd immunity until at least 75% to 80% of the residents have been immunized. Those interested in taking the vaccine may also register with the state at getvaccinated.oregon.gov to be notified of appointments when they are available for your eligibility group. The Canby City Council, in its role as the Canby Urban Renewal Agency, has approved a facade improvement matching grant for up to $25,000 to replace the damaged and decaying awning over Rice Time, a restaurant in downtown Canby specializing in teriyaki and Asian cuisine. The new awning will also feature a color change from the current maroon with an old-timey font choice to a stylish black and white, according to a mock-up from the applicant Yonsil Jong. The Main Street Design Committee was also in favor of the refresh, noting that the current aging facade is visible from 99E, as well as downtown Canby, and the proposed redesign is more in keeping with its neighbors, the Bell Office Building and Howard's Barbershop. Since 2010, the URA has funded construction grants of up to $25,000 to encourage private investment in the city's urban renewal district, which includes downtown Canby, the Canby Industrial Park, a narrow strip of 99E that connects the two. The city's facade improvement program partners with property owners and businesses to make improvements to the exterior of buildings that are clearly visible from the street, providing grants of up to $25,000 with matching funds required from the property owner. This program has been successful in generating design improvements at approximately 3 properties this year, including significant upgrades at the Holly Mall and former Parsons Building earlier this year. Other beneficiaries include Bricks and Minifigs, Canby Station, the former Canby Herald Building, and Countryside Living, as well as Ebner's Custom Meats. A Malala man was arrested for numerous charges and outstanding warrants after attempting to elude police on foot in the Beaver Creek area early Wednesday morning. According to the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office, a deputy noticed a 2006 Mazda sedan driving recklessly and without taillights or license plates in the Beaver Creek area at approximately 3:45 a.m. The deputy attempted to stop the vehicle, but the car quickly turned on South Shockley Road from Upper Highland Road. The suspect drove a short distance before ditching the car in a driveway on Shockley Road and running away into the wooded area. In a hurry, the suspect left the car in gear as he ran away. It slowly came to a stop against a nearby tree, deputies reported. Deputies, with the assistance of K-9 Officer Coda, searched the area for nearly 2 hours, but did not immediately find the suspect. The car was registered out of Montana, and authorities were uncertain of the suspected driver's identity. Finally, at about 6:45 a.m., a resident who had been assisting deputies called 911 to report he had spotted the suspect on his property. Several deputies were still in the area, and they quickly located the suspect and took him into custody without further incident. The suspect was identified as Frederick Jason Lauderer, 37, of Malala. Officers determined that Lauderer's driver's license was suspended, and he had 5 felony and misdemeanor warrants out for his arrest out of Canby, Oregon City, Marion County, Yamhill County, and Clackamas County. The warrant charges include a probation violation, possession of methamphetamine, failure to appear on 2 counts of unlawful use of a motor vehicle, and failure to appear on theft charges. Lauderer was transported to and booked at the Clackamas County Jail, where his bail was set at $94,000. Cycling has boomed during the pandemic as a safe, socially distanced way to get outside, explore one's surroundings, and to get a little exercise. And Aurora is eager to support and cater to the growing community with a new bike repair hub conveniently located alongside the town's public restroom facilities. The 2 things that will ruin a ride really quickly are a bathroom emergency and a bike emergency, cyclist enthusiast and Aurora Parks Committee member Ronan Feely, who helped coordinate the project, said with a laugh. You can take care of both of those here. Feely said he got the idea from seeing the hubs available on the Banks Vernonia bike trail and studying cycling heat maps on sites like Strava. Feely says that the town has seen a surge of new cyclists coming into, or more typically through, the town in the past 12 months. We were seeing that a lot were cycling in from Lone Elder or from Canby, Feely said. They would come into town and they either go straight through Aurora or they turn around and go back toward the airport. We thought this would be a nice place to stop off. Aurora City Recorder Stuart Rogers recognizes it as an opportunity for economic development and boosting Aurora's tourism appeal. This is one of our efforts as we explore ways to connect with folks that are outside of Aurora. Invite them to come on through to our backyard and visit some of our local shops and restaurants, Rogers said. The hub is nestled amid the antique shops, salons, and tasting rooms of historic downtown Aurora and within easy walking distance of the Aurora Colony Pub, Filbert's Farmhouse Kitchen, and the White Rabbit Bakery. Bike hubs tend to be like a Swiss Army knife, with every tool you need in a compact presentation, and this one is no exception. This one includes an air pump, hex keys, wrenches, and a hanger arm to mount your bike while you're working on it. It also includes a water bottle filling station in addition to the all-important restrooms. Check it out on your next ride on the gravel portion of 2nd Street Northeast. New signage is expected to be installed in the coming weeks.
Now hear this. Sports is brought to you by Rife and Hunsaker PC. When you need an attorney, turn to the firm Canby has trusted for over 50 years. Call them today at 503 266-3456. Welcome to 5A. That appeared to be the message in Wilsonville Friday night as the perennial powerhouse Wildcats battered a banged-up Canby squad limping into the home stretch of their COVID-shortened football season, 37-14. Playing without their offensive catalyst Chance Miller and with the hobbled Mikey Gibson, who played through injury, taking about half of the snaps as quarterback until late in the third. The Cougs showed heart throughout the game, but the keenly oiled offensive machine led by Wilsonville's Jace Knapp and his 5 passing touchdowns was too much for the shorthanded Canby. Wilsonville remained solidly in control throughout. Despite breakthroughs by Canby here and there, the home team's victory on senior night was never seriously in doubt. Canby's final touchdown was a bright point. When junior backup quarterback Cam Lee, seeing his first snaps of the season, faked out the entire stadium on a mimed handoff to senior Jackson Valdro before sprinting 78 yards for the score. Obviously, it was a tough night that got tougher as it went on, Canby head coach Jimmy Joyce said. Sadly, injuries are a part of the game. Joyce had kind words for the undefeated Wildcats, who would be favorites for the 5A state title this year had the playoffs not been canceled due to the coronavirus. They are a very well-coached team, Joyce said. They came out last night with a great intensity and played a near-perfect game. While admitting he was disappointed in the outcome, he said he was impressed in how many of the less heralded members of the team stepped up when called upon, including Lee, Zach Markle, Davis Hagen, and Nate Bailey. Canby's last game of the season will be on the road April 9th at Crater High School in Southern Oregon. For photos, visit our website, canbyfirst.com.
Stay connected to what matters most this winter with unlimited high-speed internet from DirectLink. While things may look a little different this year, as we all work together to keep everyone as safe and healthy as possible, you can be confident that DirectLink's reliable network will keep your video calls, Snapchats, stories, and photos crystal clear and at your fingertips whenever you need them. In 2021, DirectLink is thankful for all of their amazing members and is proud to be your local internet, video, and voice provider for over 116 years. All right, joining us on the Canby Conversation today, we are honored to be welcoming, at this point, by the time people are listening to it, it will be retired chief of the Canby Police Department, Brett Smith. Welcome, Chief Smith. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
How are you feeling? So you, like I said, this comes out next week from when we're recording this. Your last day is April 1st, so that will have already happened by the time folks are listening to this. How are you feeling right now with the retirement just around, a well-earned retirement, I should say, just around the corner?
Well, I'm feeling good. I mean, in the sense that I feel it's a good decision. I feel like I'm leaving on a good note. It's been a great career, so I have no regrets from that perspective. And, you know, it's not like I'm counting down the days. I enjoy coming to work. I feel like I've added value to the organization. And from a personal disenrichment, I think it's been a great career. And I really am thankful for it. I've been thankful for the opportunities here. So I'm excited about the time to leave. It's 40 years here this month. And so in April. So it's been a while. And so I'm looking forward to another chapter in what's next, so to speak. But pass the baton on. But, you know, 40 years is a long time. So I probably have a kind of bittersweet at the same time. You know, you don't really realize what it's going to be like until just about the time you walk out the door. It's been incredibly busy here. All good stuff. So as a result, it's been distracting. So I haven't had lots of time to think about it.
Yeah, I bet. They've been keeping you busy. Get every last drop of you before you head out the door. Chief, can you tell us, just take us back, I guess, 40 years ago to what got you into law enforcement in the first place? And did you anticipate going in that was going to be your whole life career, that you would spend 40 years in law enforcement? Or what got you into the law enforcement service?
Well, I think there was an early recognition of interest back in junior high with two of my buddies, and all three of us ended up going to law enforcement. But there was a period there where, you know, it was kind of a forgotten direction as far as a career path. But after high school and going through college, it was renewed in the sense of that perspective and desire. And I felt like it was a calling and just felt like that was exactly where I was supposed to be. And very motivated to move in that direction. January 1980, went on that course, got hired my first job in Portland 81. I think what I would say is it really has been a calling. So, I mean, and from that perspective, it's helped me to keep a good perspective and an outlook about the job. And, you know, it's hard. It has a lot of ups and downs. And to be consistent, I think you have to have a passion for the job and caring about what's going on with the community and the people you serve.
And what do you think was that motivating factor for you? And it sounds like to your friends, was it that calling to serve the community? Was it really cool cop movies you had seen? I mean, I know, and we'll talk about throughout your career, especially with Portland, you were drawn to certain specific areas where you really sought to reform, like sex crimes and child crimes against children. Was there something sort of like that where you sort of felt like, I think I can do some good in this area, or was it just feeling like that's more, like you said, a calling, just kind of what you were meant to do?
Yeah, I would probably describe it. It was a calling, or it was where I was meant to do. I certainly didn't watch a lot of police shows. Probably my favorite TV show, if you want to call it, was Adam 12 and Get Smart. I mean, you know, that's about as, you know, more as far as a motivating as it might have been. I think it really was what I was meant to do. It just took a little bit of time and reflection. I think certainly from my faith perspective, it kind of came clear that was where I was supposed to be. And part of that was serving and really trying to give back. I grew up in a military background, so I understood a little bit about my dad, and both my uncles on both sides of the family served also in the military and all different branches. So talking about believing in our freedoms, the rights that we have, and being able to protect those freedoms certainly was certainly very similar in police work as far as an application and caring for others that way. So it really just felt really grounded. It was really where I was supposed to go. And there's several opportunities I've had in my career. I think child abuse team was one of them. And then later, looking at human trafficking and sex crimes, really changing about how we do those investigations and creating a division that was unified in its function and purpose. And those are certainly rewarding assignments in my career that I was very passionate about.
Chief, what you spent, I believe, 20, 25 years with Portland?
Just about 29 years there and over 11 years here.
Yeah. So what brought you to Canby, and how was that transition from a very large city and large agency with Portland Police Bureau to a much smaller and probably in a lot of ways a different approach to policing down here in Canby?
Well, really, you know, I was 29 years here with Portland, and I knew I was getting pretty close to a time when I was going to round out that career and that career there. And so, you know, the ideas were, you know, starting to develop as far as, you know, what I'm going to do next, and knew that I wasn't done. And actually a friend had referred me to Canby, and I looked into it, and initially I wasn't that interested, but as time went on, I believe I felt like I was a calling here, and I knew I'd be challenged here. There was challenges that were here at Canby, and I looked forward to the opportunities to take on some new challenges. As far as, you know, being different, yeah, I mean, certainly size, those are things you think about, Portland or Canby, but when it comes to service, when it comes to caring for people, when it comes to the training that's required at the academy for us, the truth of the matter is there's not a lot of differences about what's expected about how we perform our work. When it comes to size, you know, in Portland, I could delegate. In Canby, I don't delegate as much. And the delegation we do have is much different. And so the work we do is different maybe in that regard for the volume or the type. But other than that, you know, police work has a very common thread in it. And it has to do with, you know, safety and protection of people and property. It has to do with community livability issues and how we respond to our neighborhoods to provide a sense of community trust. And so those don't really change. You might have a little bit differences in how we approach it based on our interaction and reception that we have with our communities, because they're a huge part in our success in being able to keep our community safe.
Absolutely. Chief, what would you say that you was your approach to being the chief here in Canby, your approach to leadership? What do you feel like you brought or sought to bring to that role?
Well, I think, you know, I had to remember, you know, Portland and Canby are different, and try to remember that we have a lot of really talented people here, and being able to really respect and to appreciate the talent and the capabilities that we have here with our own members. So, you know, I bring a lot of different kinds of experiences in leadership just because of the volume and the different types of assignments that you have when I was with Portland, in a sense of specialty units and things of that nature. All of those have really helped me, I think, to be confident in the leadership. But I think coming to Canby, you know, it really was listening to our community, listening to what the concerns were, and then listening into our apartment about where we needed to go and what was broken and what was working, and then trying to work on those things and strengthen those weaknesses and then take advantage of the strengths we have to move forward.
Yeah. Well, speaking of things that are broken or things that are challenging right now with policing, I feel, and I'm sure you'd probably agree, here in Canby, I think that we've avoided a lot of the strife that we see in larger cities like Portland, in terms of the politicization of police that has occurred, some of the challenges that those officers face in doing their daily jobs, a lack of support, or at least in some ways a perceived lack of support from the community. I don't think we have those problems here in Canby, fortunately. I feel like you guys do, and do enjoy quite a bit of support from the community across broad segments. But you obviously having the background in Portland, I'm sure that you still know people there. I wonder just kind of how you feel watching some of the things unfold, some of the challenges that officers felt in other large cities last year. What were kind of your thoughts on that? And was it just sort of a sympathy and a kind of a empathy that you felt for them? Or how did you feel about some of those things that we saw last year?
Wow, that was a lot to ask for. That was a big question.
I was going to start with that one, but I figured I'd ease you in a little bit.
You certainly did not ease me into that one. What I would say is, well, I'll just start out a little bit. You know, you said, you know, we do have a community here that's very supportive, and there's always stuff for us to work on. But I think, you know, for us, we have to be honest about, you know, those challenges that are out there and what changes are taking place. And I think for us, honestly, look at our policies, look at our training, and trying to stay ahead of the curve, anticipating where those changes are, making those corrections as we go, so that when we're getting some of those political changes, they're not quite so much a surprise. And even with the last go around last year, there was a lot of things that were recommended changes for the police. And I think our department is, for the most part, already there. And we shared our policies to our community. We shared them with our city council mayor on a city council meeting. And so they could see that. And then they also saw where we were able to update those changes and anticipating what was being recommended by some of our the legislature in that regard. And so I think being honest and letting people look at that helps us be able to stay, you know, in step and also have some confidence with our community that way. I think Portland's having a real tough time. I think one of the things that maybe difference is that, you know, we do have support again from our community, and we also have support from our city government. And it's has not been adversarial, and any issues of concern that have come up, we try to deal with them and have that dialogue and discussion. And so I think that is probably one of the biggest successes we have, is that we're not, I think we're working as a team there's unity and we're working in a forward motion to try to accomplish what I think everybody's trying to try to do. And I think that's probably the biggest success. I think Portland gets frustrated maybe at times, just a perception, because there's not a lot of good communication. Maybe that is felt, maybe either side. And as a result of that, there's a lot of tension because there's a lot of mixed messages about the direction and what needs to be done and how to do it. And it's kind of hard to unring the bell sometimes. And so I think those are some of their struggles up there that we don't have down here, at least in my experience here in Canby.
Yeah. And I just want to shout you out for that. I do recall a meeting where, a bill about police techniques and use of force had passed here in Oregon. And there was a work session with you and I believe Captain Gonzalez and some of the other leadership with Canby Police and the city council, just kind of reviewing. And for the most part, in fact, I think almost to a T, everything that was now, off the table had already been done, even before that bill passed here in Canby. So a lot of it really is that sort of proactivity that is needed, is just trying to kind of stay ahead of the curb, not sort of trying to reach a finish line, because the finish line might, be different by the time you get there, but just trying to stay ahead. And I appreciate your leadership and that of your team as far as that goes.
And just to add to that, Canby, and there's a lot of other agencies too, but Canby belongs to part of that Oregon Accreditation Alliance, which is a Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police that really sponsor this particular organization to audit and review our policies. And so that we're having good policies that are consistent with best practices that are out there. And also, making sure that we're keeping up with the latest changes that are out there. And so we're a part of that alliance that allows that kind of internal review and auditing of our department, which betters our department. And it also gives confidence to our city that, we have policies that are current and up to speed.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that we've talked about before, you and I, Chief, and back when a lot of the larger Black Lives Matter protests started last summer, you were gracious enough to join us and kind of share some of your thoughts as the local police leader. And I remember talking with you about police culture. And I just want to say, that workplace culture is the thing, right? It's not something that's specific to police. Environments can be toxic anywhere there are people and bad culture, right? It's not something that is especially dangerous or especially can especially affect police departments. It's any workplace, I feel. But because it is a thing, police culture, and it is important as it is in any workplace. How do you and I guess your command structure approach that issue of police culture and crafting how you want officers to act with integrity and treat our community and everyone in our community, regardless of if they're a suspect or a victim? How do you approach that? Another big question for you, Chief.
Well, I think one of the things that's most important to me is hiring people in our department, in all of our positions, sworn or non-sworn, people of character. And, I can't train character very well, but I certainly will recognize it and see it. And that's going to be an important piece for our success here when we're doing our interviews and hiring people. So hiring people of character, we're going to believe that everybody has an aptitude and or an ability to learn. So we'll train them. But we're looking for people of character. But, part of what I've done here is when we send an announcement out for a job application, there's a position opening. For our sworn positions, when you're at home and you're filling out the application, basically you're buying into our values before you're ever hired. And that document becomes very important for us because we want to make sure that when you hire onto us, you knew at the time what those expectations are. A lot of it has to do with our integrity issues. It has to do with trust, being truthful, as it relates to how we approach the job. And part of our policies is our organizational values. It's our mission statement. It's our oath of office. It's our code of ethics. And we have our officers sign that. They all receive a letter from me that talks about expectations. It's about you know, standing in the gap. We don't let people fail or do wrong and ignore it. We're all working as a team, and there's an obligation. And when you let somebody fail, then you're failing yourself and the organization. And we have people sign those documents as part of their buying into that kind of a belief system. And that's the culture we're trying to create. That's what we're trying to represent. And if we have, you know, a situation where we're going a little sideways on that, we remind them of those documents and that commitment that we have here. So I think we have good people here, though, that are trying to represent those values. It doesn't mean that we don't need to work on it. It just means that we're starting with good character, and that helps us move in a direction that brings a culture that's trying to do the right thing for the right reasons at the right time consistently.
That's great. And I definitely agree with that. I've all the officers I've met and your captains, your leadership structure, do seem to meet that bar, for high character. And it's really nice to see. So Chief, you wrote a letter of thanks to the community that we're going to share on our website for folks to read. It was interesting that so much of it was about your successor, who's going to be taking your place, current captain. But by the time folks are listening to this, acting chief, George Trow, who has been with Canby Police his entire career.
Well, he was a little bit, he did a little bit of time with Clackamas County, but the light went off and realized that Canby was the place to be.
Okay. Well, I just thought that was interesting that you talked so much about him. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about your successor and kind of why you feel so comfortable handing off the reins to him? Not that it was necessarily your decision, but tell us a little bit about that transition.
Well, it was certainly a recommendation that I made, and it was supported by our city council mayor and city administrator. And you know, George has been a longtime member here. He's, like I said, he's been with Canby for 23 years. He's a captain here. He's risen through the ranks. He's very familiar with our city and our department from a historical perspective. And he's an honorable individual. And I think he will be a great successor, I guess, if that's the right word, to this position. And I think it's a smooth transition. If, you know, if we're trying to work toward succession planning, then, you know, then we need to honor it. And I've been here 11 years and working under certainly a different leadership style as I came from Portland with different expertise. And so he's had that opportunity to grow in that time frame, 11 years. And I think it's it makes sense. And if we think we have an eligible candidate, then I don't know why we want to spend a lot of money trying to do a search elsewhere if we think we can do this successfully. So I think it's a great opportunity for him. I spoke very little about myself because I'm other than to say I'm leaving, and I'm so thankful and appreciative of the community and the citizens who've been so supportive of me and our department. But the next question everyone asks is, okay, you're leaving. So who else, what's going on? So I think George is part of that, that greeting that I'm sending out to everybody and to let them know a little bit about him. He's had, like I said, he's grown up in this community. He's had kids go to school here. He's been involved in the sporting program and volunteer coach, and he's on Rotary, and he's really well connected and well received by many people here.
All right, I'm moving off the hard questions for you, Chief. What comes next for you? What comes after retirement, or are you just you haven't had time to think about it yet? You're not sure.
Well, I am hired by the Academy. They've asked that I and another chief, we put a curriculum together, and they asked that we go around the state doing some regional training on administrative investigations as it relates to how to do investigative work on personnel matters and holding departments, you know, inside accountable for their own personnel. And so certainly that's something I'm used to, and this other chief is as well. So I'll do that a little bit. I think it's not a full-time deal. We have an opportunity to schedule a little bit. So in the meantime, I bought a hunting dog and hoping to do some training and some opportunity to do some bird hunting. So kind of a little bit of this and a little bit of that, but not full time anything.
Sounds great. Anything that you think you'll... Wow.
Hello.
I've been pretty good with the mute button until right there, right? What do you think you'll miss most, Chief, about the job?
Well, I think one of the things I miss, and I certainly, even when I left Portland, and I will here as well, you meet some really neat people, genuine people who are really caring, people I won't be able to see on a regular basis, or maybe never again. And I live far enough away. It's not a place that, I would come down regularly to follow up, but you miss those relationships in the community. And I think sometimes those are a little hard as you move forward and move on. Yeah. Certainly the people here in the department, there've been some great people here, and I won't be able to have those same connections on a regular basis.
Absolutely. Well, Chief, we certainly appreciate your time today. We want to thank you so much for your service to our community, your leadership, and leaving our department in a good place. It is great. I just want to say, having seen, we just went through not one but two city administrator, searches nationwide, and it is so much easier and smoother. And less expensive, frankly, right, for the city to be able to put somebody quality internally, into these very, very important leadership positions. And part of that is obviously thanks to Captain Tro and the quality person that he is and all the time that he's invested in the community. But part of that is also thanks to you and your leadership and making those steps easier for him to step into.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, thank you for those nice words, and thank you for the time here. And again, I'm very thankful and very appreciative of the opportunity I've been able to serve here. And so I've learned a lot, and hopefully the people that have been here have felt that it's been a good season. And I really am hopeful for continued growth that way for our department, our city.
Chief, you will be missed. Thanks again. Best of luck to you in your retirement.
Thank you.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. Mm-hmm. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate, and we got in a carriage ride with the horse, and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months. Sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime. Yeah. I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life.
Mm-hmm. How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
All right, we're here with Heather Wright Zimmer. She's the founder of Pass It On Canby. Hi, Heather.
Hi, thank you so much.
And we are here at your basement lair.
Yes.
At Ultimate Team Spirit.
That's right.
Where you store all the donated equipment and also are starting to give it out by appointment only.
Why don't
you start by telling us a little bit about the organization for people who might not be aware or people who don't remember what sports are?
Okay, really? That is a good point. So this organization was started 2 years ago when I was coaching my daughter's soccer team. She was 6.
Through Canby Kids.
Through Canby Kids. Mm-hmm. And a little gal on her team kept showing up late to practice. And I realized that she needed to wait until her brother was done with practice so she could use his soccer gear.
Mm.
And I thought, not in my town. And so very quickly we put together a donation, some donations to give to the family. And I started thinking, how many other kids fit into this category? There are scholarships to play, but there scholarships for gear don't exist.
Right.
And so a lot of people had mentioned, well, I have stuff I could donate. And it turned into this amazing, cohesive sort of unit where families want to get rid of their old gear.
Right.
And they didn't really have a place to do that unless there was an obvious person to hand me down to.
Right.
And so I put out my feelers, and Canby Kids said that they would back the foundation under their umbrella.
Right, nonprofit.
Nonprofit. And then I asked a few locations around town if they would host a collection barrel, which you can see.
Right.
It's a collection barrel. And it's amazing in this community how often people just say yes.
Mm.
We have barrels at Better Homes and Gardens Realty downtown, Millar's, Thriftway, Oliver Insurance, Ultimate Team Spirit, where we are, and we have a barrel at CrossFit Wilsonville, too. And people just started donating. So much stuff. And we grew out of our tiny little storage space quickly.
Yes.
And Betty upstairs at Ultimate Team Spirit was generous enough to donate this space for the cause. So it has been we have an incredible group of volunteers, collection sites, and families to come and use the gear, and then they're able to just turn it back in and pass it on to the next kids.
Yeah. It's awesome. I remember when you guys started a couple years ago, and it was one of those things where, like, oh, that doesn't already exist? Like,
right.
Like, of course that has to exist. Like, that's it makes so much sense.
Like you said,
you have people with unwanted but still very usable gear. You were showing me some of these shoes.
Yes.
I'm going to grab those big ones again.
I'm
pretty sure those were donated by Shaquille O'Neal Foundation.
Amazing?
But they look barely used, like a lot
are.
Of this stuff.
I don't
stuff.
Think they've ever been used.
Yeah.
And they're size 15s.
Yeah, so good luck to the kid and the family that has to feed that kid, whoever ends up taking those ones.
Yeah, we have a wide variety of sizes. I just stocked a pair of size...
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. Well, 10 and a half, or 10s, soccer cleats.
Uh-huh.
So we have something for everyone, and the kids grow so fast at this age, they're barely used.
Right, exactly. They don't have time to use them. Okay, so Heather, what is the process now? I'm not sure actually what's happening with Canby Kids Sports. I know Canby School District for the high school, things are starting to loosen back up.
Right.
Canby Kids, I think, have had different guidelines and whatnot throughout the summer and throughout, you know, the year, last year. But anyway, if folks are interested in checking out what you have here, how does that work?
So right now, it seems that the families are focused on getting gear for soccer and baseball, which both are having seasons, spring seasons. And so if families are interested in coming to shop, which we would love them to, because this is the last place we want all of this gear. We would love to have it out in the hands of the kids. Mm. If they're interested in making an appointment, which is how we're managing COVID restrictions, they can visit Pass It On Instagram or Facebook page.
Okay.
Or on those pages, if they can also get my phone number and text or call to make an appointment. So our appointments are 20 minutes, and we can service two families at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have someone upstairs checking in and responsibly rotate through the families.
Yeah. Yeah, awesome. Are you still accepting donations?
Always.
Okay.
We're always accepting donations, yes.
Right. And what about volunteers? Do you need help washing all the jock straps that come in and things like that? Or?
That's funny. We take our volunteer group very seriously.
Yeah,
so
sure.
we had a training event initially when we started this program to talk about ways that we wanted Pasadena Camby to be represented in the community,
mm-hmm.
and to make sure that it's seen as a fun shopping event for
mm-hmm.
families.
Mm-hmm.
So we plan to have another volunteer event in the next few months.
Okay.
And then those volunteers would be welcome to come and stock gear, empty collection bins, or help at our first Thursday evening events.
Okay, cool. And if folks are interested in that, I assume same channels, Facebook, Instagram,
mm-hmm. yep.
Website. Okay, mm-hmm. great. Heather, can you tell me about an experience maybe that you've had that you've seen the impact that this has made on a family or on a kid being able to do sports that they might not have been able to do otherwise?
I think typically it's the sense of relief that you see the families leave with.
Hmm.
Maybe they had a hard month, or they are wondering how they're going to keep their kids in sports when it can be such a huge extra cost.
Yeah.
And so I think when they're able to come and get the gear that they need, they realize that it's something that they don't have to plan for.
Mm.
And everyone is always very appreciative. Sometimes we don't have the gear that people are looking for.
Right.
And so we've set up a program where we have a wish list, and we write their information, if they want to, on the wish list. And then when we get donations, we go through and match the donations with the items on the wish list.
Mm, awesome.
So that has been...
So you can backfill some of those requests sometimes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I think this is just great. It makes our team stronger. It makes our school stronger, because we know what a positive impact mm-hmm. Extracurriculars and sports can have on kids, even in their educational mm-hmm. pursuits, if
right.
they have that to look forward to. You know, definitely economics should not be a reason that kids cannot participate.
Right, right.
And it prevents waste. I mean, it just checks all these boxes.
It
it's so right. great. I love that you guys are doing this.
Thank you.
Anything else that you'd like to add? Or tell people
just,
about.
I am just so thankful to our wonderful community for hosting, donating, and then coming and using our gear. Because without that cycle, the program doesn't really work. We don't exchange any money at all. It's all free to families who come. And we just would love more families to utilize all of our great gear.
Awesome. Thanks so much,
Thanks,
Heather.
Thanks, Tyler.
Hey, Frankie, you okay? You seem kind of down.
Yeah, I'm just bummed. I miss going to the Wild Hair. I know you can still get takeout and all, but it's just not the same.
You know they're open again, right?
What?
Yeah, they've been open for a while now. Don't you cover, the news?
Hey, I'm only human, okay?
Okay. Well, I can tell you that the Wild Hare and their amazing staff are thrilled to be open again for delicious meals and fun times. They are strictly following all the recommended safety guidelines, and they have the only covered outdoor patio in Camby, with lots of tables spaced 6 feet apart and umbrellas also spaced 6 feet apart, and fantastic ambiance. And hey, if you're still more comfortable with carryout, they can hook you up there too. Find their menu and other information online at thewildhairsaloon.net or check them out in Camby in Oregon City. Anything to add, Frankie? Frankie? Oh, I guess he left. God, he must have been really hungry. Now Hear This Camby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Camby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.